Seems appropriate. I'm in my second childhood, isn't it? This is a story about a king and three brave men, all with really strange names. The king's name is Nebuchadnezzar, and the three men were known as Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They lived in a place called Babylon, and the three men worked for the king and had important jobs for the province of Babylon. One day the king decided to build a huge image made of gold that stood 90 feet high. To understand how tall this is, imagine 15 men all standing one on top of the other to make a tall tower. It sure was big. King Nebuchadnezzar then made an announcement. "People of all languages, when you hear the music, you must bow down and worship the statue, because I have said so. Whoever does not obey and worship the statue will immediately be thrown into a fiery furnace." The problem with this is God does not want us to worship anything or anyone other than him. After all, he is God. He made us and he loves us so much. He came to earth and died for us and cares about every little thing in our lives. Why would we want to pray or worship something that isn't real, something that can't answer our prayers or help us? To worship a big pile of gold like the one King Nebuchadnezzar set up is silly. The gold can't hear, see, or care about anything or anyone. So the next time the music played, everyone stopped what they were doing and they bowed down to worship this idol. Everyone, that is, except for Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego. Some of the king's workers that were jealous that Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego had such good jobs saw that they would not bow down to the image, so they immediately ran to tell the king. When King Nebuchadnezzar heard the news, he was very angry. He immediately ordered that Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego be brought to him to explain their actions. The men were brought before the king, and Nebuchadnezzar said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego, that you will not bow down and worship the image of gold that I have made? Just in case there was a mistake, I give you another chance. When the music plays again, you will be ready and bow down to the image. And if you don't this time, you will be thrown into a fiery furnace. Then what God will be able to save you?" Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego looked at each other and replied to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we did not make a mistake, nor will we apologize for not bowing down. If we are thrown into the furnace, the God we worship will save us, and he will rescue us. But even if he doesn't, we want you to know that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up." That made Nebuchadnezzar even more mad. Right away he ordered the furnace to be heated hotter than it usually was, and commanded some of the strongest soldiers to take Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego to throw them in the fire. The soldiers took the three men just as they were, straight to the furnace. The men were wearing all their clothes, including robes, their shirts and pants underneath that, and turbans on their heads. These things would catch fire very easily in the fire. As the soldiers were pushing the men into the furnace, the flames of the fire killed the soldiers because the fire was so hot, and Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego fell into the hot, hot furnace. Then King Nebuchadnezzar jumped to his feet in amazement and asked his advisers, "Weren't there only three men thrown into the fire?" They replied, "Oh yes, king." He said, "Look, I see four men walking around in the fire, untied and unhurt, and the fourth looks like the Son of God." Nebuchadnezzar then came as close as he could to the furnace and shouted in the doorway, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, follower of the Most High God, come out, come here. So the three men walked out of the furnace without any burns, no hairs on their head burned, all their clothes perfectly fine, and no smell of fire on them at all. At that moment, Nebuchadnezzar knew that they worshipped a real God, not some fake statue. God had sent an angel to protect them from harm, and even more importantly, he realized that they truly believed and trusted in God. They were willing to die rather than serve or worship any God except their own God. So from that day on, the king made an announcement that all the people of all languages, could not say anything bad about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego's God, or they would be badly punished. The king then gave the three men even better jobs than they already had for the province of Babylon.
When I was living in Canada, I came across an American Reader's Digest, which, you know, they often have quite interesting little quirky stories in it. And I was reminded of one of them when I was preparing for this evening, because in Canada and America, they call boilers furnaces. So it worked quite well. So the story went that a representative of the gas company phoned the owner of an expensive new home to make an appointment for the engineer to come in and service the furnace, checking the pilot lights, adjusting any settings to make sure that it was working just as it should. The owner of the home said he'd need to be there to meet the workman, or he'd never get the furnace working. And the rep insisted, no, our people are really well trained and they know what they're doing and they're going to be able to fix this for you, no trouble at all. And the owner of the house said, no, really, you don't understand. When your man tries to adjust the furnace, he'll go out of his mind. The thermostat in the entry hall is a dummy for my wife to play with. Only I know where the real thermostat is. And I guess, the owner of the house knew where the thermostat was, and in lots of ways, God knows where the thermostat is, even though we don't necessarily. And Warren Wiersbe, who's a theologian and author, puts it like this: when God permits his children to go through the fiery furnace, he keeps an eye on the clock and his hand on the thermostat. And I think that's a really encouraging thing to think about as we think about this story. That reminds us that God absolutely is in charge of all situations. And, you know, this story of Daniel and his three friends is a real story. It wasn't made up. It did happen. How do we know that? Well, it's in the Bible. And I trust God to take care of his book. He wouldn't allow us to be misled, and he wouldn't allow some made-up story. So, you know, if it's not in the book, it didn't happen. God wouldn't let us buy into lies. And just because I can't make sense of it, or the world can't make sense of it or explain it, it doesn't mean it's not true. That's kind of the essence of what having faith is all about. And we read about this huge statue, you know, men standing on top of one another, or another way of thinking about it is 2.5 telegraph poles, or about half the height of Nelson's Column. So big, really big, as it said in that story. You know, you'd be craning your neck to see the top if you were close up, and you'd definitely see it from a long way off. And it was a golden image, and that's an awful lot of gold, which has always been regarded as valuable and precious. And I suspect something that big would, you know, probably not stand on itself, likely to be quite topple over because it was big and heavy. And we're not given actually huge amounts of detail about this statue, but many scholars believe that it perhaps wasn't freestanding, it might have been carved into the cliffside, and some people even think it might not have been entirely made of gold. The text simply says an image of gold. It could have been made of another metal and covered with sheets of gold. And actually, historians of the time who mention a statue of gold in the Temple of Belus, which Xerxes demolished, talk about a statue that was 40 feet high, and it had 1,000 talents, which is about 33 tons of gold inside it, rather than being made of gold. And golden statues were what were made and built back then, and using gold in this fashion was a really common activity because it was a way they honoured their gods. they felt that it was an appropriate way to be expressing their devotion. So our story is all based on normal behaviour of societies of the day. But it's not only just true in this story, it's a story with a twist. The statue was of an idol erected to glorify a pagan god. And as we know, idols at that time, not uncommon at all. The difference is that this was an idol of a man. It was an idol of Nebuchadnezzar. And it was huge. And that's one of the things that made it different. It's quite a bit bigger than most of the other statues that we hear about. And the fact that it was in Nebuchadnezzar's image was also quite different. So it was actually the image of the king. And he got really personally involved. And he goes to have huge trouble to make the idol made and wanted everyone to be able to see it. And not only that, he set aside a special day so that everybody could come down and bow down to it. And he makes a major kind of musical production. And in my head, I kind of think it'd be like, you know, potentially like an Olympics opening ceremony or, you know, something you would see for a jubilee, a big stage and lights and tiered seating for the dignitaries and crowds thronging the streets. And, of course, it would be televised so everyone could see all these people lined up to come down and bow down to this statue. And it felt like it was something that was on repeat. This didn't just happen once. So, you know, it felt like, you know, every weekend this would be going on. And, you know, it wasn't about recognising achievements. It was just about recognising a man. It was about, all about him. Just totally about him. And, you know, he wasn't that confident really, was he, that people were going to do this. So he made a command that if anyone didn't do this, if anyone didn't bow down, then there was a price to be paid. And it would be a severe price, and it would cost them dearly if they were to refuse worshipping this idol and his paganism. Because you see, it's not just about the idol, this is also about a king and his desire to force his value system on his people. He's imposing his pagan lifestyle on an entire people, and he's doing it because he can. He's rich, he's powerful, and he can definitely hurt you if you oppose him. It's kind of like the powerful people of our day who say, you will accept all kinds of immorality. You will accept putting others, yourself before others. You will accept things that are against God's teaching. Because if you don't, there will be a price to be paid. You'll do it. It'll cost you otherwise. It'll cost you your job, your business, your income, your safety, your security. The rich and powerful in society have, and probably always will, tell us that if we don't bow down to what they say they will destroy us. And so in this story in Daniel 3, we see that everybody bows down. It's not worth the hassle if they don't. They don't want to pay the kind of price for saying no. Everybody that is, except three good young men from Judah, Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego. Now some people might look at this story and say, well, why did they do it? You know, surely it would have just been easier to bow down, everyone else was. It was only a statue, didn't really matter. But actually, it did matter. And it reminded me of a situation that I faced a few years ago. It was when I was youth minister in a church in Surrey. And I took a stand about a situation that I felt was wrong, was against God's teaching and was immoral. And the church leadership wanted to hush it up. And about that time, I was visiting with a friend, not a Christian, or even a church-going kind of person, but somebody that I had known and had been a friend for many years. She asked me, you know, why are you doing this? Why are you taking this stand? It's going to make things difficult for you. It could be really uncomfortable. You could even lose your job. Look the other way. It's not that big a deal. If it wasn't happening in the church, you wouldn't take such a stand, would you? And the honest answer was, yes, I would. I felt it was really wrong. And I did ultimately end up leaving because of that situation. But my friend, don't judge her harshly, she wasn't a Christian, and she was trying to care for me and protect for me. She didn't want me to lose my job and be in a difficult situation, so she, you know, was advising me not to take the stand, just to give in and bow down, in essence, to the idol, in the same way that Meshach, Shadrach, Abednego absolutely could have gone with the flow, but they didn't. And why didn't they? Well, I think this is for a couple of reasons. I think this was a God moment. This was a time when I believe God was setting them up and he was putting these three young men in a position where they had to make a choice. And God does that a lot in scripture. So think about Abraham, for example. He had been given the son that God had promised him, and then God asked him to make a choice. God asked him to sacrifice his only son, Isaac. And David, just a young boy, shepherd boy, whose father had sent him his food to his brothers who had been fighting the Philistines. And when he's there, he overhears the threats that are coming and the insults against Israel. And at that moment, David had to make a choice. And the choice he made was to hear the threats and to take a stand. And then Esther, a queen married to an evil, brutal king. She learned her people were in danger and her uncle Mordecai came to her to ask her to intercede with her husband to protect her people. But she wasn't eager to do that. Her husband was known to kill people on a whim, and if she approached him without his permission, she might end up dead. It's then that Mordecai tells her, "Do not think to yourself that in the king's palace you will escape any more than all the other Jews. For if you keep silent at this time, relief and deliverance will rise for the Jews from another place, but you and your father's house will perish. And who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this." In other words, God may have placed you in this situation to take up a stand for righteousness. But if you don't make the stand, you may not serve yourself anyway. You and your father's house will perish. And that brings us back to Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego. They were faced with a harsh decision, a time when God had set them up to stand up for righteousness. And the odd thing is, if they'd chosen to surrender, if they'd bowed down and compromised their principles and their beliefs, they'd have died anyway. It would have simply happened in a different way and at a different time. Because in Daniel 3, and 8, 9 and 12, we read, "At this time, some astrologers or Chaldeans came forward and denounced the Jews. They said to King Nebuchadnezzar, 'May the king live forever.' But there were some Jews whom he had set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego, who pay no attention to you, your majesty. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image of gold you have made and set up." These astrologers or Chaldeans evidently hated Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego. We don't know whether it was because of their position, the power they had, or whether they just hated all Jews, but it was very clear they were intent on destroying them. And if they perhaps hadn't made the stand that they took, actually maybe those astrologers and Chaldeans would have just found another way to take them out. Faced with that kind of hatred, I suspect that these three young men decided that if they were going to be burned anyway, they may as well be burned for the right reason. So how does all of this apply to you and me? Well, for me, it comes down to how we answer the question Nebuchadnezzar asked Meshach, Shadrach and Abednego. Who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands? I'm not sure I'd really noticed that question before preparing for this evening. Really, that question is at the centre of the entire story, and how Meshach and Shadrach and Abednego answer the question is the focus of the entire story. Who is the God who will deliver you? And how did they answer? They said, "Our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O King." Do you believe that? Do you believe that your God is mighty to save? Do you believe that God is able to deliver you? The reason why so many of us and some strict Christians struggle in their faith is because they don't believe that. They don't believe in a God who will have their back. They don't believe in a God who cares. They don't believe in a God who is able to do anything. So when trials and struggles come along, they can't stand up. All they can do is kneel in submission. I was chatting to a colleague at work the other day, and they were telling me about their son's football team. And they were saying that when they'd been watching him play that Saturday, they knew the team were going to lose just as they walked out on the pitch. Just by the way they conducted themselves, the way they went out there, everything about their demeanour just said they'd lost before they'd even tried. They believed they were going to couldn't win, so why even try? And you know, if we don't believe God can do things in our lives, then we can't win. And more importantly, God can't win. We've already lost. And actually it's Satan that's won. But if we take to the field, if we step out into our lives believing that our God can do stuff, big stuff, and we spent time in prayer asking for his help, there's no force on this earth that can bring us to our knees. We may not have a win, but we won't have lost. And that's what Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego were saying. We may not win, but we will not lose. Our God is able to deliver us. And then they said, but if not, if God decides that he isn't going to save us today, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden images that you have set up. Even if God decides not to rescue us from the trials we face, our fiery furnace, we must not bow down. We must not surrender. Or we're dishonouring God. So we need to stand firm, just as Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego did. A couple of years ago, the film Dunkirk was released, and it gave me a perspective on those events that I was previously unaware of. So I think probably, as we all know, on September the 1st in 1939, Nazi Germany began World War II, and it swept across Europe in what Hitler called his lightning war. When it was all said and done, Hitler had driven the Allies back to the sea, and nearly 5,000 British and American troops were trapped at that small city of Dunkirk on the English Channel. Germany had them at their mercy. Hitler's armoured divisions were only 15 miles away, and the Luftwaffe bombed and strafed their hapless army below. Several leaders in Britain discussed trying to bribe or cut a deal with Hitler. Sir Edmund Ironside, chief of the Imperial General Staff, confided to a colleague that this is the end of the British Empire. Harold Nicholson, a member of the British government, wrote his wife that they might be compelled to commit suicide. And it was in that desperate moment that the Church of Britain called for a national day of prayer. Numerous political leaders, George VI, and newspapers called for a national day of prayer on Sunday, May the 26th. And people flocked to churches in droves, and long lines were formed outside places of worship. As the British people anxiously waited, the word of the fate, a three-word message was transmitted from the besieged army, and those three words were, but if not. The British public instantly recognised the message. It's a reference to what we've just heard in that story of Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego, standing before King Nebuchadnezzar in the fiery furnace. Our God is able to save us, but if not, we will remain faithful to him anyway. And at 7 o'clock on May the 26th, the order was issued to attempt a desperate evacuation of Dunkirk. Every tiny vessel and private craft was sent across the often treacherous waters of the English Channel. But something really strange happened in those 9 days of rescue. Hitler ordered his troops to halt in an order to give the Luftwaffe the chance to seal their victory. But German air power was hampered by the extremely unfavourable weather in the skies. Additionally, a fog settled that hid the troops as they boarded the boats, and the normally treacherous channel waters became unnaturally calm. And at the end of the 9 days, of the 500,000 men trapped at Dunkirk, 336,000 were saved. Was the fact that a nation prayed, and moreover believed that God was mighty to save, in the fact of the outcome of these events? I believe it was. I believe that prayer and faith made a difference. Why? Because our God is mighty to save. Our God is able to deliver us. And when God steps up to defend us, there's no power on the face of earth that can withstand him. And there's one more part to this story that we need to remember. And in my mind's eye, and it was described beautifully in the way Molly read it for us, is Nebuchadnezzar sitting there smugly on his throne, watching as Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego are bound and thrown into the fiery furnace. I can see him sitting there with his smug smile, taking a peek in again, and then standing up as he realises there's 4 men. And he turns to one of his servants and saying, how many did we throw in? It was only 3. And they said, yes, it was only 3. But when he asked one of his servants, they said, I see 4 men working around in the fire, unbound and unharmed, and the 4th looks like a son of God's. In some translations, the 4th looks like an angel. What we do know is God that was there with them. And rather than a son of God's, I think it was the Son of God. I think Jesus was there with them. Because God tells us, when we're faced with our very own fiery furnaces, he is beside us. God makes his promise repeatedly throughout the Bible. And in Deuteronomy 3:18 it says, "It is the Lord who goes before you. He will be with you. He will not leave you or forsake you. Do not fear and do not be dismayed." This is a promise that we can all rely on, because it's the promise is yours, because each of us are his child. If you sense the need for a God who will stand beside you, then this is the offer for you. God's offer is simple to accept. Believe in the risen Jesus Christ. Repent of your sins. Confess Jesus as Lord and Master, and allow yourself to be buried in Christ in the waters of baptism. And I encourage you this evening, if you feel you want to explore more about your faith, understand more about being a Christian or being baptised, please speak with one of the leaders. We're in good masses tonight here, it seems. So please speak with one of us. It'll be our delight to talk to you. As we've seen in this story of Daniel so far, and we will see more so in the coming week, the Lord our God is the God of all our days. Something that in the busyness of life and in our weaknesses we often forget. And I came across a song recently, and I found the words really powerful. And such a great reminder how my Lord has chosen me, saved me, and is with me always, just as is with Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. When we are broken and suffering, when we are struggling and tired, when we are tested and tried, he is with us every step of the way.